Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Bad Batch Report.
Mr. Skinner to the manager's office. Manager's office, Mr. Skinner.
Again, if you haven't been listening for a long time, when we do these reviews and discussions of episodes called Report, I say the name and then Ken makes some noise. And it started off as humming a theme. And now we've gotten down to the point where it's like a sketch in between a song on an album, which I love. That is great.
It's like a Bruce McCulloch comedy album, except for not as funny for my part. Yes. Yes. Anyways, shout out to the wonderful Shelby Young, who does two voices, and she does that PA announcer that I swear is a riff off of Hot Fuzz.
It absolutely could be. I love Hot Fuzz, and I love some of the absolute Hot Fuzz-like comedy, even in the way it's filmed in the horror of Crosshair's life that is driven home by that PA voice, wonderfully imitated by Ken just now. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person doing great sketches is Ken Knapsack, and we are here to discuss The Bad Batch. We are into season two. This is episode 3 of season 2. It is entitled The Solitary Clone. But lucky for us, there are many clones in it, including Commander Cody, which is great. This episode is written by Amanda Rose Munoz and directed by Saul Ruiz, and continuing story editor credit to Matt Machenovitz, all familiar names from the Clone Wars and a previous season of Bad Batch. We always like to start with sharing our viewing experience because we have big thoughts and everything, but we are fans. So we like to, you know, sit down and just absorb the episode, and then we kind of start diving in. So, Ken, what was your viewing experience of The Solitary Clone?
We will confess we kind of watched and recorded a little early. As we said before, we're blessed with the screeners, but you and I kind of, you know, watch the screeners. Either sometimes we just don't watch and we prefer the midnight experience. And this was an early one. So this is a great episode, an important episode we're about to discuss. But for most of the episode, an ampersand was over Crosshair's face for me.
Yes, I love the turn of phrase midnight experience. We've talked about staying up late to watch these on midnight with everybody else. But the midnight experience, that is my new favorite imaginary jazz album. Yeah, for me, I had to watch the screener. We are recording this earlier than the episode is actually released because of some schedule stuff. And as Ken is referencing, the screeners come with your personal email blazoned across the screen. We've joked that they're a strange mustache. There's one deeply meaningful shot of Cody right at the end where my email was literally over under his nose, over his lip. Total perfect email address mustache for Cody at a deeply important moment of the episode.
Yeah, as always, we're certainly not complaining. We are blessed to have them. We truly are. But it's become fun, unintentional comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very funny because like the first screener I watched that had that was the first couple episodes of Andor. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to rewatch these immediately when they're available. And I did. But it was pretty amazing, like all of the emotional memory of watching it, all the kind of pictures in my mind of what it looked like on the screen, my mind erased the email address. So it works. Mm-hmm. It's great. For me, this was the first time I kind of had the experience that I realized I've talked about wanting to have on the podcast. I realized, hey, I have these screeners. I could get up on Saturday morning and watch a Star Wars cartoon. Yes. So I got up Saturday morning. I didn't have sugar-filled cereal. I had some English muffins, some coffee. I had a new action figure of an ARC trooper I just got. Sat down at my desk and watched The Solitary Clone. It's a fun Saturday morning cartoon. And it was extremely fun. But I don't know if fun is the first word I would use to describe this episode. It was many amazing words. I'll throw fun in there, but let's get into that. Let's get into our overall reaction. I think we're on the same page on this one. Love it. Like it. Struggle with it. Ken, where did you go?
Love it to the high heavens. But can we just set the scene here of you doing this in 1985, sitting down for a Saturday morning cartoon and the Muppet Babies are like, are we meant to kill? Is that what we are? You're slurping your honey crisp, honeycomb cereal. Mom, this cartoon's a little serious.
Yeah, a little baby Fozzie saying peace was never an option. That would have been great.
That's amazing. love it. If you want to out there listening, consider this hyperbole. Fine. Let me just start here. This was one of the best pieces of Star Wars media ever. Going back to 1977, you don't need to rank them. You just put this in the Hall of Fame, right? I've now watched this episode 4 times. I'm blown away by it. Sal Ruiz is directing, but because it just comes off. This is so beyond the medium of animation, which is a fine, wonderful medium with a lot of possibilities. Some that aren't possible in live action, but this just comes off as its own thing. And Amanda Rose Munoz, who's written Tales of Jedi, which factors into this episode. Mm-hmm. She worked on the first Dooku episode, right? Resistance, Rebels, all the stuff. She's worked her way up from script coordinator to writer. Everyone jokes. Tony Gilroy, give him control of Star Wars. John Favreau, give Amanda Rose Munoz control. As a writer, this was absolutely a breathtaking, haunting, important episode of Star Wars.
Yeah, I totally agree. If this is if this needs to be dubbed an episode of Hyperbole Center, so be it. But I don't think it's hyperbole. It is, for me, my opinion, one of the single best episodes of a Star Wars television show I've ever seen. I think what makes it so powerful is it's really just a swing for the fences. You know, it's a decision to say, this is what's at stake in our tale, this tragic tale of the clones. This is what's at stake in this era. This is what's at stake for Cody and Crosshair's soul. And we are just going to use every element, storytelling element at our disposal and not shy away from the horror. And I think that's what makes it really powerful. It's just amazing tonal work. The entire episode is grim, heartbreaking, and at times horrific, with that little explosion of absolutely necessary Star Wars hope at the end. We don't see Cody fight his way out. It's not big and explosive. It's just that little line of dialogue in a sad, you know, awful, dank meeting with Crosshair, where we realize that Cody made his choice and he's gone, and you still get that burst of Star Wars hope. I think the grim, the heartbreaking, the horrific, it just permeated the design of the episode, right? Desix itself, even though Desix is sort of conveyed in the episode as a place of hope, an independent place, a place that is, you know, on kind of the right side of the philosophy of we deserve to be independent. Still, the design of it was Mustafar-like, you know?
Yeah.
It looked like hard work to live on Desix. We got the sadness of Crosshair's dank, depressing little barracks. You know, even Cody has been stripped of his color, right? He used to be the bright orange of the 212th, and now it's that dull gray that accents his armor. So it's just in every bit of visual storytelling that this is a sad, bleak time for the galaxy and these people. And then I think for me, Ken, one of the biggest things for the sort of the tonal completeness of this episode is Star Wars often has this fun conflict within itself, right? That it's called Star Wars and it's fun, full of like fun, exciting visual action, but it usually comes down on the side of pacifism. And those ideas are at stake here. Is peace an option? Is there any way to avoid bloodshed? In the action in this, there's some episodes of Clone Wars that I love where everybody's talking peace and then you're kind of saying like, wasn't it awesome when that clone died? Because it was cool, you know, where there's a little bit of conflict in the tone. The action here was not a tonal shift. It deeply helped tell the story. The action was cool, right? And fun because the actual action, there are some beats in here after, you know, years of watching clones and battle droids. There were some beats in here that were surprising, inventing and gripping. Yeah. But so much of it was because the action was telling the story. Cody and Crosshair's lives and souls were on the line as they marched through a mini recreation of the horror of the Clone Wars. So everything tonally was there. Final thing I'll say here about my overall reaction is I think one of the other things that makes me feel like it is one of my favorite, you know, individual episodes of Star Wars storytelling is I think Star Wars at its best tells these massive, emotionally complex stories in this really minimal, action-packed way. I think it's one of the original powers of Star Wars, you know, colon A New Hope, that it's this big, fast, fun thing. But in those quiet, little, minimal moments, there's so much meaning that can be unpacked for decades and decades. And this episode did that too.
Yeah, I think this is an episode that should be and will be referenced down the line by us and other shows and fans for the effect, for the lessons, and with you on the mood and the mood being very purposeful. I put a note of it's almost like a silly surface note, but the moody red sky of Desix in the opening and kind of what we see on Coruscant later, it reminds me of this is the silly pop culture reference, but Legolas saying, you know, red sky, blood has been spilled, right? Like this kind of like ominous kind of tone. And then you got what's going on in the action there. You're right. Some very cool action. Can't wait to discuss. But the way it carries these two clones together, if you're not wrong in the, it was a weird moment to find myself rooting for battle droids and droidicas against clones after so many years. And it really wants you to analyze what's going on. And some of the stuff that we will discuss with Cody and Tani Ames, voiced wonderfully by Tasia Valenza is the actor's name. I think those are things that the episode's not meta in a, there's one real meta moment, I thought, but there's one, it's not meta in like a Community episode, six seasons in a movie of, aren't we having fun doing a sitcom, but not doing a sitcom. This was a, episode that I think also for me pulled you in, sat you down and said, have we stopped to look at what Star Wars has been saying for years? Have you got some of the stuff? Let's talk about it. Let's put it out there on the shelf for you to maybe understand. You don't want to talk politics? Well, when you don't do that, this is kind of what happens. You want to just look at the cool side of the war? Great. There's some fun stuff, but look at the effects. This episode happens. It's almost bookended in a way in front of the wall, the memorial of lost clones and the dead of the war, compared to the battle droids. We even get the comparison of the difference between us and battle droids. It's about the choices we'll discuss, but you and I have a sympathetic little place in our heart for the battle droids now these days. Maybe we didn't back in 2008 or even 99, but their death experienced a lot different when you even have Cody in this episode reacting to one of the deaths of the clones. So all of that kind of comes together. Yeah, you could pull it apart and look back on it, and the conversations are important, but it's not heavy-handed. I don't think it's heavy-handed. Mm-mm. Other than one or two direct lines. It wants you to sit down and think about what a lot of the big themes are in Star Wars and have been present since the beginning.
Yeah, and I think that it does have some lines that are that lay out the stakes and lay out the themes and lay out the choices, and I think that's important, and that's a part of the style of Star Wars storytelling in general, but specifically of the animated side. You know, going down to Clone Wars used to start with a moral to make sure that it was clear. But I think what's so successful about this episode is all of the elements, the visuals, the music, the performance of all the voice actors, the direction, it makes you feel it. So if you sat down going, I want to just have some fun with the clones, I don't want to be dragged into thinking about the morality of this, this episode is not going to let you escape, because even if you try to shut off your brain, it will make you feel it, because you don't know who to root for. You know, and we'll talk a lot more about that. But I think that's such a great, great point. I think I lied and said I was going to be done talking about overall reaction. But I do have one final thing. This is a really interesting, you know, episode early in the season. Right. The show is called The Bad Batch. Crosshair is a member of The Bad Batch. So we're still following The Bad Batch, or I guess he was a member of The Bad Batch. But I just felt like this episode was another sort of solid reminder that this show, the main characters are the Bad Batch, but this show is also about this era of transition, moving from one horror, the Clone Wars, into another, the tyranny of the Empire. But I want to spend time with the main characters we know, Hunter and Tech and Wrecker and Echo and Omega and Sid and all that. But I'm really fine with it also being having an element of anthology that shows us this era. And I thought this was another episode that was saying, like, that's what this show is doing. Totally fine if you don't like that, but don't think that isn't what the show is, because it is.
Yeah, again, I don't want to say it's grabbed you by the shirt collar and saying, listen, but that's kind of the feel I got. And even like the first viewing, I was like, oh, that was great. And I think I was texting you, that was great stuff. You're going to enjoy it. I'd watched a little bit before. And then it was my the notes viewings, where it's a lot of the lines, everything was reaching out and grabbing me, not just with real world stuff, but this post Andor world. I think this is up there, right there with a lot of those big episodes in Andor that are just like pointing out of the screen at you and what's going on and what's been in Star Wars. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. A powerful episode to connect with some of the big ideas of Andor. Yeah. So I watched this episode on a Saturday morning, texted you, cause you had told me, hey, it's a little darker, it's a little heavier. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, well, damn. So I texted you, and then I normally watch an episode and then just kind of let it sink in. And then, you know, maybe I'll make some notes and then I watch it again to, you know, pick up some of the little details. I was supposed to move on with my life. I was just going to watch it on Saturday morning. And I spent like, you know, a half hour just writing down all my thoughts because I was so engaged by this episode. Mm-hmm. So let's get into our thoughts about the big themes, the ideas at stake in the episode. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot that's intertwined. But if it's okay with you, Ken, I want to start with one specific idea.
Let's do it.
And that is trauma, you know, fun trauma. I feel like so much of the great and detailed ideas of this episode hinge on the episode being a sort of a eulogy for the Clone Wars, a sort of what if we got to just continue this, or what if we were trapped in this horror forever? You could look at it in lots of different ways, but, you know, the beginning early on setting, like you mentioned, is the first battle memorial that was put up, according to old Wikipedia. I looked it up after the first battle of Geonosis. So even that memorial is from a long time ago. When Cody is looking at it, you know, with that knowledge, you have to know that he's kind of thinking about, remember at the beginning of the war when people claimed they cared and claimed we were heroes? He's a memorial from the first battle. But it's obviously it's a reminder for both Cody and Crosshair and us, the audience, of just this, the huge number of losses they've observed, personal loss, but also the loss of their kind, their way of life. Right. And then big picture, what the action is, while it's fun and inventive and cool, it's a march through an awesome dark castle. But it's basically like a video game of playing through the levels of Clanker horror, right? They're swarmed by B1s, they're the tank, then the droidica, then the commando droids, then the tactical droid. I think the way it's structured, it's like a review of their trauma, right? This is the fight they were born for. This is what killed all their brothers on that memorial wall. And for both Cody and Crosshair and the audience marching through it, it I think invites us to go, this is what the Clone Wars were. This is horror.
Yeah.
What was it all for? Why are we doing this? How do you feel about that idea that the episode is inviting us to relive a horror and consider what it's for?
I absolutely think it's doing that because of where we get at the end with Cody literally saying we've lived through the horror of the war. Let's not do it again. And him having this view on it. And again, Cody, I think, believes so much all through this episode of what he's doing. Like he's got doubts. He's learning. He's staring at walls. He's already got it. But I think he's saying dialogue that he believes. And at the end, everything about that is on quicksand. And I think a lot of it has to do with what he experienced in the past. I love that you're citing this comes out of the Battle of Geonosis. Graduation day for a lot of those clones, right? Congratulations. Camino. See you in the real world. And this is what you're dealt with. Your weapons of war, and you don't know who you are beyond that. And again, that moment where I think it's the clone has all the grenades and he kind of, the poppers explode and Cody has a reaction like, no, I forget exactly what he says. But
he screams the clone's name, which is Nova.
Nova. And Rampart would be like, who? Nova what?
CT what? Yeah.
CT what? All of it, it absolutely, again, forces you to look back and analyze the journey, which includes these cool moments. We get so much cool action here. But it is, you mentioned the video game thing. There's so many video game-like levels and moments. I was even laughing to myself. I'm in my season of Fortnite. I'm just playing too much of that damn game where, you know, you're going into a building going, who's in this castle with me? I got to figure it out. I sneak around. And I was laughing watching the clones do this. Literally didn't feel like a video game. And Star Wars can do that, right? And you can engage with it on a level. And this one kind of reminding you of what this actually is depicting. And it's not the trauma that you're talking about doesn't necessarily just have to stick with soldiers in the real world or anything. Oh, we all have this kind of thing. We all have this kind of pain that we've lived in and cycles that will keep us there. And a lot of this is about Cody deciding, how do we break this cycle? Because I don't want to continue to live like this. And what are we doing? What's the purpose of this?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it is fun. And there is a sort of video game element of like, oh, man, they beat one kind of separatist clanker droid. And then they're faced with the next one. But it is really shot and edited like a horror movie. There's some almost jump scare sound effects that are amped up louder than they sometimes are if you listen to headphones. The commando droids, who are always scary with their little unnatural bobbin and weaving. I know that a horror movie Megan is very popular right now. They're all a bunch of Megans. They're so fast and so creepy. And there is just this sense that their lives are truly on the line. You know, there's some episodes of Clone Wars where definitely clones we know die, or definitely dozens of nameless clones die. But this feels like Cody could die. Crosshair could die. It felt real. And I think that really helped amp up the stakes of their lives and their souls are on the line. So why? And I feel like the button was put on it so well of Cody watching the TK soldiers, the soon to be stormtroopers march onto the planet. Right. In that look on Cody's face of like, I just did a review of my war and the reasons that I think I fought my war. My war is over. My brothers are over. This is all over, right? It was really powerful for Cody to kind of see these TK troopers, the future stormtroopers, to see them as we kind of first saw the clones at the end of Attack of the Clones, as as a failure, as a militarization, as a, you know, a refusal to even try to find peace. You know, made clear in the episode that Cody wants to see clones as heroes who come to help the beleaguered citizens of a planet. And now he's just staring at those troops like, oh, that's an occupying force. They aren't here to help. They're here to take.
Would you say he's emotionally doing the Bail Organa fist bump on the porch railing there, the overlook railing, the end of Attack of the Clones?
Absolutely. He's gently fist pumping the railing as we love that moment for Bail of like, damn.
I guess fist pounding. I said fist bumping. That's not right. Fist pounding.
Yeah, the rail's not sentient. He's not like, hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy, good job. No. And also, again, this episode, there's that little moment at the beginning of the episode because the clone's talking about, basically the draft order, the desired clones. And so it's like you got that plane over as well. It's just like the clones bred for this are now no longer considered viable for that. The trust, the honor, the clones, they're all traitors, like that's starting to like become a theme. But and so what are they without this? And so here you are being replaced by this more tools of the war machine.
The one clone says, I heard the defense recruitment bill is up for a vote again, and the other clone says, well, let's hope it doesn't pass. every corner of this episode is tragedy, because like you fools, of course it's gonna pass, you know, you don't anyway. So I wanted to really frame it with trauma, frame our discussion with the idea, like that's kind of the spine of this episode, is that these two characters who are trying to decide who they want to be, who they want to trust, what they believe in, Cody and Crosshair, are sort of marching through this review of their trauma. And and from there, I wanted to go to this idea that of what do you choose to be loyal to? Crosshair and Cody, you know, they both start with this tension of having, they seem both to be kind of happy to see each other, right? Because they trust each other. They got each other's backs normally, right? back when we met them in season 7 of Clone Wars. But this time, in front of that first battle memorial, they kind of have this, they're feeling each other out, right? Are they both loyal to the Empire, or are they traitors like their brothers? You know, Cody starts it by going, I heard Bad Batch. I heard the rest of your brothers run away. And I think when Crosshair says, hey, yeah, happened to a lot of Regs too, is basically like, yeah, your boy Rex ran away too.
I love that exchange, because I wrote down the note of Clone Force 99 was different by design, right? So it's like, almost like they have their own identity. They were bred to have identity when maybe the rest of us weren't. And so this is, and I love him just tossing back. Yeah, well, Rex too. Rex did this as well, bleeper. That was a really funny exchange to add the tension to their relationship.
Yeah, that is great. And I think he literally says Regs too, but I feel like he means Rex, you know?
Oh, maybe, you know, no, you're right. I didn't have the closed caption on this time around. So it could be Regs, it could be Rex, it could be both. It is both thematically.
Here's my criticism. Crosshair could learn to enunciate. I'm just saying the low, cool, gritty mumble. That's all awesome. But I think he says Regs because I think they're kind of comparing, you know, their life history. But I feel like what he's saying is, your buddy Rex ran away too, let me tell you, you know. So I think, you know, that's framed, you know, are they both loyal to the Empire? Are they loyal to their traitorous brothers who ran away? Does Cody have any lingering allegiance to the Jedi? You know, all that. It starts with that choice. And then I think, you know, over the course of the episode, it's pretty blatant that they prove and choose their loyalties. But I think what's really interesting to me and what I want to discuss is sort of how and why they they choose their loyalties. And, you know, big picture for me, I think Crosshair is absolutely loyal to the idea of being a soldier, right? He just, he resists change. He wants the simple, clear-cut life he's always known. I'm a soldier of the Empire, and it's almost like a challenge. Like, let me see how awful the Empire can treat me, and I will prove that I'm not going away because I just want to be what I've always been. So it's interesting that he doesn't want change. So from his perspective, even though the march through Clone Wars memories horror is, you know, terrifying and he almost dies without Cody's help, I think there's got to be some comfort in it because he just wants this forever.
Yeah.
Where
Rampart, Rampart even asking him, what kept you alive? He's gone for 32 days on Kamino.
Yeah.
I'm a soldier of the Empire.
Yeah. So let's just start by discussing Crosshair. What do you think? Do you think his loyalty is at all challenged? And what do you think he's actually loyal to? Is it the idea of the Empire, or do you think it's just he wants to be a soldier, period?
It could start there. Good soldiers follow orders is always been his theme. It's a big theme of this episode. It starts our episode, it ends our episode, and what that really means. And I still hold the hope that this is weird to say that there isn't a Crosshair redemption. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case, but the valuable lessons and living with your choices, as Cody says to him at the end. I think what keeps him there, not changing is good, the comfort of the life, but not having to be challenged possibly, even though I think there's cracks in him, I think. I believe.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely believe that. And even Rampart saying, funny thing, everyone around you seems to disappear or become a traitor, .. And we
know he was like expressed emotional hurt, right, of kind of being replaced by Omega, right, that his brothers just moved on without him. So we know he's got that level of dimension to him.
Yeah. And so I think they're, trapping. Because I one of the big episode themes is freedom. And you got the freedom for the those on Desix. You got that. But, freedom for Cody is up on the air. Like what choices he wants to make and how that can lead to freedom for others. I think Crosshair is so trapped. And I do think he knows that. I don't buy a lot of his decisions. And it's tragic. But it's almost like some of his decisions he's making to confirm it for himself. That makes sense. I believe he believes good soldiers follow orders, but when everyone around you, everything around you is making you question that, there is a possibility that you might reaffirm your beliefs. But when you start thinking about it again, this is what Ames is talking about. Like, well, yeah, you don't want to talk about politics because if you do, you might find what you are doing is unjust. And when you hit that moment in your life, I think you might start saying and doing things to be like, no, that thought I have inside me is wrong. And I think that's towards the end of this episode, a lot of what I see Crosshair in trying to answer your own questions. Like what keeps me here? I don't know. I'm going to kill everyone and I'll find out later and just hold on to this. Cause this is what I do. This is what I know. And I'd rather do this than change.
I think to me, that's it. I think it is about a lack of change. You know, that was really prevalent in the finale of season one of Bad Batch, where Crosshair literally didn't want to move forward to escape Kamino, right? The destruction of Kamino, and his brothers kind of had to force him along. And this just feels like, it almost feels like in my own life where I've had moments where I like everything the way it is now. I like where I'm living. I like my friends. I like the things we do. And then stuff outside of my control starts to change, right? People move or get a different job or a new friend group. And in this world you lived in starts to splinter, right? And you can have this instinct to just grab on and go, no, I like it this way. I don't want any of this to change. But you have to accept that, you know, things around you change and you can either grow with them or not. And I feel like it's a really, you know, big, fantastic, violent, heavy stakes, life or death version of your friends all moved on when you're 28. But I also feel emotionally that's what's going on. Of he's like, I like this. I like when I was born with a purpose. I knew it. I was good at it. I was rewarded for it. And I don't want it to change. And I think I can be so stubborn that I can stay in this same place. But everywhere he goes, it's collapsing, right? His brothers in the Bad Batch are gone. Even his breakfast routine doesn't work anymore. Other clones won't sit with him, right? Cody forces him to question it again this episode. And I think that's what's fascinating to me about them both marching through this reliving of the Clone Wars. I think in a way, Crosshair kind of gets what he wants, you know, not almost dying, but a reenactment of the Clone Wars. And he gets complimented on his badass skills from his brother Cody, right? But the episode keeps reminding us that it is not up to Crosshair. There's no amount of following orders or taking abuse from the Empire that he can do to stop things from changing or be accepted, right? The clones won't eat with him. Cody deserts him. Rampart will never trust him, you know? I think this gets down to the title. I think he is choosing to be the solitary clone because he is refusing to change and everything is moving on without him.
A great Neil Diamond song, A Solitary Clone. you're saying a ton of stuff there I want to get into. First of all, just in terms of the episode, yeah, one of my favorite moments is the Rampart moment with Cody. Cody, the number, right? Of course, we get that. We get the Empire doesn't view them as individuals. They view them as numbers. But the fact that he says that, right, is a big moment to me. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that shows the crack. And that he knows what he's dealing with enough to go, sigh, CT, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, that bleeper, he left this morning. It just shows a lot of what's going on. And you're talking about things, talking about the change around you. How many friends do we have where we're like, you just want to go, hey, have you considered you're the problem? Have you looked at everything else around you? And one of the beauties I love of this episode, and one of the things I love discussing Star Wars with you and the Force Center friends here, is we are talking about war. And this can go to soldiers. This can go to real world stuff. Mm-hmm. It can go to real world politics. But it can go to where you just went to. It can go to your interpersonal relationship with your friends. It can go to the changes that happen in life, the changes, the possibilities you're presented. This is such a almost, just a day by day kind of episode with like, are you having problems at work? Are your drinking buddies not the same? Do you want to make some changes, but you're holding on to it? You're getting really stubborn. You know, even down to remember the argument I had with my parents 10 years ago about text messaging. My dad's like, we don't text message in this house. We don't do it. And it's like, well, why? Why don't you text me? No one calls anymore. Okay, I'll call you on Christmas. Text me every day. And that's stubborn. And I have that streak. And I think a lot of changes that I'm experiencing in my life, not just politically or socially or anything, the big things that I talk about here in Force Center, but those who are around me started 10 years ago. It took me 8 years to finally go, I can't avoid this anymore. If I want to move forward, I got to make these changes. I've felt like Crosshair at that table alone for a long time. I felt like Crosshair going, my real connections are long gone. And I'm faking it now. I'm holding on to it. I'm not changing. And there's a lot of that at play. It's not just the war stuff. It's the stuff we love talking about here. And it's big real world stuff. That's what also grabbed me about this episode here with Crosshair. Alone, solitary clone. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of that end shot. I love how many endings there are, right? That it takes its time in the sort of the denouements to really get the point of the episode across. But I love that final shot is him kind of walking through the halls, still the same, but his armor's kind of different, you know, the solitary clone. And it is, there's an element of sort of a toxic strength to it, right? That I would say, particularly in America, particularly in our generation, there can be a celebration of if you're just strong enough, you know, you can make it through anything. And it's sort of like, I think there's some real toxic strength going on with Crosshair of like, yeah, next time leave me stranded on a planet for 68 days and I can take that too. And like, dude, who are you owning?
Dude, who are you owning?
Who are you proving it to? You know, is Hunter and Tech and Wrecker going, well, I guess he was right because he's, look how strong he is. Like, no, Rampart's practically making fun of him. You know, that great line of like, so you came back. Why?
Why? Oh,
it's such toxic strength to demand that everything stays the same.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it. Sorry, young children. Rampart's a little shit. And he just, it is just driven home. He's a dangerous villain, as we saw last week. He's dangerous, but he's also dangerous on this way, where it's so condescending. It's so like, I've got this power. He's such a weasel. And yeah, regarding the toxic strength, often viewed as toxic masculinity in our crowd, it's a big area of conversation for me. It's something that I try to address even in my stand-up comedy and among my friends, where that's such a misunderstood term by those who are most affected by it, which is the men. It's not a call that you can't go be a lumberjack and chop wood and drive a 4x4. Do that all you want, but you're hurting yourself with the things you're talking about. The toxic strength you talk about is really on display here. I love that you're saying 68 days. I'll go 68 days. and you're hurting yourself. Whereas Cody, who is just as strong, maybe not skilled as a marksman, who's just as strong, just as a survivor. He is all clone. He has seen the other side of it. He's seen the effects of this quest for power, this quest for strength, not understanding that what you think you're doing, protecting and serving, providing, all these kind of things that are generally associated with the strength, when it veers over into this toxic strength area, you're just hurting yourself. You talk about the solitary clone title. There's two clones alone in this episode. Mm-hmm. Crosshair at the beginning and Crosshair at the end. Cody, I think, is alone as well. But Cody, I think, decides this idea of a solitary clone can make a difference and a different choice and help those around him in a different way versus what he was maybe even bred for, discovering more wrinkles. And he doesn't lose any of the physical strength. He doesn't lose any of the appearance of strength. He is who he is. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean you're sitting down and baking brownies like that's some sign of weakness, right? And I think that's really on display here too. And that's the stuff that if I know a lot of crosshairs right now are sitting by themselves and going, if I make another choice, I am weak.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think that's, you know, those kind of things that, you know, we can pull out of the episode and we can articulate and discuss in depth. But I think, again, the skill of this episode is on a deep level. It just makes you feel them, right? You just, yep. It looks miserable to be Crosshair. I love that it's his little breakfast routine in his crappy little room, right? It makes you feel that he's not making choices that are making his life any better.
I love that you said that. His life looks absolutely miserable, and he might be the coolest of the bunch, right? He might be the one, I got the toothpick. I'm Jean Reno in every movie in the 90s, and I can, you know, use little disc mirrors, puck mirrors to shoot. He's the coolest, man. And
I'm in the 1980s. Yeah.
Yeah, you're so right. But yeah, you know, one of the beauties of discussing it and looking at Star Wars and engaging with the art this way, I don't think Amanda Rose Munoz sat down after breaking the stories in the writer's room and said, finally, I can write an episode that deals with toxic strength. I don't think that's every little line. There's so much stuff at play, but I definitely think it's in there. And when good art presents things to you and gets you excited. I'm excited about this episode, and it's so sad and dramatic and lonely and somber because it is one thing that it's a mirror. It's a mirror to all of us if you want to pick it up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you said some great stuff about Cody. So let's get into Cody. If Crosshair is being loyal to the idea of a soldier, Crosshair doesn't really, I don't think, care about the Empire, but he's being loyal to the idea of a soldier, to the strength of not moving on from the past to being who he wants to be. Which is not changing at all. Cody is this contrast, right? Cody really makes it. There's a great question raised of like, hey, Cody from the films, from Revenge of the Sith, is kind of the one clone that we have perspective for, you know, before the actual Clone Wars animated series, right? Of he was buddies with Kenobi, right? They joked. He handed him back his lightsaber, and then boom. Right. So it raises this great question of like, how is Cody going to feel? And I love that the episode kind of starts with, we don't know, you know, he's still there. He's acknowledging change. He hasn't run away. He does not push back on the clones who run away are traitors, just like the Jedi. You know, I think Crosshair's given him that barb to see if he reacts, and he doesn't. So there's still that mystery of how Cody feels about Order 66. Right. Mm-hmm. So then it was great to see him march into this really with his head on his shoulders, clear about what he believes in. And it's clear throughout the episode that Cody is steadfast, right? He is loyal to what he chose to fight for in the Clone Wars, which is the idea of peace and order in the galaxy, making it better and safer. Now, there's a couple episodes in the Clone Wars, not always specifically to Cody, but with like Rex, when the deserter episode, right, where the argument is made that Cutlaquane is fighting for what matters to him most, protecting his family. And Rex is kind of like, well, the Republic's my family. I'm fighting for this idea, right? Mm-hmm. So you can kind of extrapolate that Cody and Rex are in this same ballpark where Cody defined the service. He's like, yeah, I was bred for this, but I'm an individual. I have choice. Do I believe in what the Republic is doing? Yeah, look at these horrors that the Separatists are unleashing. They're attacking, you know, hospitals. They're invading planets. We're going in and saving people and defending people. That's the philosophy of the Jedi. That's the philosophy of the Republic. That's what I'm doing, right? Yeah. And we from the outside, of course, know that he's a pawn. But it's great to catch up with him and think, I can. That's still what it is. It's called an empire great. That's still what it is. You know, that great moment where is they're fighting, you know, for their lives and their souls up that tower. Those citizens come out terrified, and he says, "It's okay. We're here to help." And you can see in their eyes, like, that's not what they see when they see you. You are an invading force. You're a terror, right? And then. He marches through that clanker hell, which I think for Crosshair, there's some amount of like, great, I'm doing what I'm best at. And for Cody, it's just like, here we go again. This is life or death stakes. You know, this is still not over. How many more of my brothers I have to watch die? There goes Nova, right? How long did he know Nova, right? And I think it leads him to that moment at the end, which is a huge Obi-Wan Kenobi fan. I love to see Cody as the negotiator, like his Jedi before him, you know, making that choice to be loyal to his vision of the galaxy. You know, he says to Tani, the Empire seeks to establish peace and order throughout the galaxy. And there's this great tragedy because we, the audience, know he's wrong. But there's also this almost fist pumping heroic moment because that's what Cody believes in. And that's what he's fighting for. That's what he is loyal to.
So many thoughts bursting out of me here. That line is one of the most important ones in the episode. It's okay. We're here to help. It's just absolutely tragic because he believes it. He believes it. And I guess I could try to keep it Star Wars, but I'll explode it out into the real world. I think that's, for me, a lot of what I see out there where it's okay. We're here to help might be what you think is on the side of your black and white vehicle. It might be what you think is on the sign with the Bible verse outside of your church. It might be what you believe in your speech after you win after 15 votes. It might be what you think that you're here to help. But when you go in and analyze it, you yourself are an island. You're a solitary clone. Look around you and see what the actual results of your actions are. If you can analyze that, you can pull back. It doesn't mean that those systems, those jobs, those places need to be torn down, destroyed. It does not mean that the Jedi Order needs to go. It just means that you need to reconnect with what you're actually doing here and who you actually are in this situation. I think that's what Cody's doing. He puts down that gun because he absolutely believes it's absolutely true. But that line, that absolute line, we're not here to debate politics with you. If you did, you might see how unjust your actions are. It's so powerful. It's so powerful what this message is trying to do. It's what Andor is trying to communicate, what Solo is trying to communicate. You might believe it's okay, we're here to help. But is that the actual result of your actions? And I think for Cody to stop and analyze it, that's what's so powerful for me, and to make that choice at the end and to look back, the highlight reel probably in his mind about, yeah, I was a good soldier and I followed orders. What did that actually do?
Yep. What were those orders actually for? Yeah, I love that you're highlighting those lines. There's so much in there with, you know, Tawny Ames, you know, being this sort of great Separatist purist, right? We talk a lot about how there were Separatists who legitimately saw problems with the Republic and wanted their independence, and Dooku, a Sith Lord, manipulated them into, you know, doing awful, going into this war and doing awful things, the kind of awful attacks that we see Dooku and Grievous and early on Asajj participate in, just awful, awful things. But Tawny Ames, this purist, right, who just wants independence and wants peace, right? I love how much that she's kind of loyal to not only her people, but the sort of Separatist, you know, original goal, those Separatists just wanting to be, you know, separate from the Republic, independent. She offers, you know, Groton to stand down at the beginning. She offers to let Groton go. You know, she's got this super cool line that everybody really liked from the trailer of peace was never an option. But it's so telling and so tragic that she gives it a try one more time because Cody kind of does the right thing and offers, you know, a hand of peace rather than the blaster in the face. So I think Tawny Ames is very important for what she's loyal to. I really want to get back to these lines that you're talking about. We're not here to debate politics with you and Tawny Ames, saying if you did, you might see how unjust your actions are. I do think that's a really powerful gut punch of, in the real world, often politics are sort of coded, I think, for lots of different reasons, as a thing not to discuss, right? Or, you know, hey, the politicians are always this all the same, or it's this sort of like deep, elaborate, unknowable rules. You know, it's just a bunch of rich people in suits fighting in Washington, D.C. How does it affect us? All this. There's all these different things at work, in my opinion, for all sorts of different reasons, to get us to go, and politics is this far away thing.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. If Cody's just like, hey, look, I know that I'm fighting for what's right, so I go and fight. I don't want to talk about who has more votes or what you horse traded to get what vote, right? And Tawny's basically saying, like, that's the wrong definition of politics. Yeah. Politics is the conversation you and I are having right now. How are we going to work together? Are you willing to let me be independent, or are you going to, hey, take my choice away from me? The thing that you claim defines you, Cody, are you going to take that away from me? You know, and just getting down to politics is, you know, ugly as they can be and is upsetting as they can be to try to have conversations about. I always do just think of it as this is the structure by which we choose who we want to be as a society, right? There's so much that gets in the way of that. But at the heart of it, that's practically what it is. A law passes and then we all abide by that law, which expresses who we are. And that's what they're talking about, right? Of it's not a faraway thing, Cody. It's you and me here right now. It's what you choose to do.
I'll translate the conversation here. Cody, please keep politics out of Star Wars. It's always been political.
Tawny, have you seen Andor? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't mean to undercut your serious point with humor.
No, please do.
To boil it down, I think that's what's going on. This is why it's a meta moment, but not in a cute way. And again, we always say, if you want just some cool fighting, this episode has a lot of beats.
Ooh, for
you.
Yeah.
It wasn't comedy. This episode made me laugh at times with the ballad of the battle droids as it continues. But it's politics in action, yeah. And we can comment a lot about, yeah, a lot of the history of politics in any country. It can devolve into a circus pretty fast. I get why it feels like it doesn't affect you. But look at actions, choices made in 1912. Trust me, I'm reading that book. I'm 40 pages away from finishing it. I keep mentioning it on Force Center. I just got to the end of the election last night. Choices made in 1912 affected the next 100 years and beyond. And it wasn't just silly politics. And that, again, is when you analyze it, when you find out what's there. And you're talking about peace and the tragedy. I love Tawny Ames in that moment. It's such a great, you know, animation moment. It's such a great animation direction moment and a voice actor moment. When she does give it, she believes it because Cody's telling the truth for him. So she believes him. But then when the governor makes the claim, it's like she's looking at him. I'm going to die. But do you see what I see now? It's such a tragically powerful moment there because Cody realizes it all right there. The end game isn't peace and order. It's power, and it's more power. And that's the system I'm part of.
Yep. It's Palpatine and his empire are about taking choice away, not coming to a consensus and making some sacrifices for the greater good, but
yeah,
what Palpatine wants will be, and laws will be made to paper that over and call it okay. And that's what the empire is. And in the face of the empire, I think I'm interested to see how much if Cody's like, because Cody says, like, we just fought another war. I don't want to fight another one. Right. And if Cody is kind of comes to accept, like, well, I'd like to go away and be done, but the empire needs to be fought.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we had a little internet hiccup there, Joseph. So I'll say again, of just tagging on all this of Palpatine, peace was never an option because peace was never his end game. That's why all this is a play. And so it's powerful for Cody to see his peace is part of that problem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So sorry for the internet hiccup. I hope I didn't speak over you.
Yeah, no, we're good. We're good. I'm going to clean it up. But for those listening, we are under a newsworthy storm in LA right now. It's costly.
All right. So hopefully the internet will hold on with us as we talk just a little bit more about the big ideas of this episode. You and I both talked about it a little bit in our overall reaction. But I think if one of the big ideas, at least one of the ways you could frame it, is what is Crosshair loyal to? What is Cody loyal to? What idea is Tawny loyal to? I thought it was really fascinating that the audience was forced to question their loyalty to these characters in terms of who are you rooting for, right? It really played with our emotions. Even though the audience knows that the entire Clone War was a manipulation, there are multiple episodes of the Clone Wars where the clones are fighting Dooku, Grievous, you know, to stop them from doing truly awful things. There are lots of episodes where the clones are the heroes, right? The droids and the separatists were usually bad guys invading planets, wiping out hospitals and civilian villages, right? And then you come to this episode and you want Cody and Crosshair to make it through. You want them to make a better choice. You're on their side. They're underdogs. They're, you know, besieged. And then these battle droids they're kind of spunky and righteous, right? Defending their home from brutal invasion from, you know, a pissant little tyrant in Groton, right? So there's this great conflict of like, who do we want our clones that we care about and love to storm the castle and take away this planet's freedom? Well, I don't want them to die. You know, like I don't want the clones. I don't want the tactical droid to win and kill Cody in Crosshair. You know, I really think it was well done to make us feel the horror of the Clone Wars because it played with our feelings and our loyalty.
Yeah, it really did, and like I said, there were some humorous moments in the show, but also for myself, just watching, going, I mean, I'm really sad that Droidica just died. Like, I'm really sad. I wanted him to get a win there, and I'm like, whoa, what am I doing? Yeah, and to maybe get to the discussion too of Separatists and the battle droids and the tanks. These are definitely it's the image of the quote bad guys in the prequels, and I don't necessarily think that's wrong. It's the army of Dooku, it's the army of Grievous, it's the army of Palpatine. So a lot of things they are doing are bad. It just, this episode drives home the point that the people behind it, that we always highlight the Mina Montaris of the world. Now we can add Tawny Ames to this based on what they're talking about in this episode. It's like that army wasn't necessarily representing them. They may have felt it, but it just reminds you all of us that. The people behind it, even Dooku, because she highlights the words of Dooku. And again, Amanda Rose Munoz worked on Justice, worked on Tales of the Jedi overall, but worked on that Justice episode, which is the first Dooku young Qui-Gon one, Tales of the Jedi. Great episode. And I love that Ames is saying Dooku was right. Dooku was right, from a certain point of view, but that was never his end game. He didn't care about you. We've seen the spoils of war. He didn't care about his own people. And that's... when people get the immoral pursuit of power. So it just, when we're looking at the separatists, I don't consider these folks the bad villains, the bad team from the prequel movies. I do consider the battle droids and all that an image, a representation of the bad that was Dooku, Palpatine, Grievous. And I guess we'll throw them all in there as well in the Trade Federation. But yeah, it's just fascinating to go back and recontextualize the Clone Wars and the prequels with this stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think just as much as the clones are defined by their choices, you know, good soldiers follow orders. Okay, well, what are the orders? What do they mean? What are you fighting to make the galaxy better and safer? Are you taking away people's, you know, freedom and choice? The same thing is going on with the battle droids, right? We are used to them as this kind of tragic figures, but the commando droids and the droidicas and the scarier ones is like, this is the brutal fist of a Sith Lord, right? Awful and cruel. But all the battle droids, the droidica, the commando droids, in this episode, what they're fighting for is pretty relatable and understandable of, we chose not to be a part of your government a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we're defending our planet from hostile invasion, you know?
Yeah. And I love just going back in the imagery of the Clone Wars, the images of playing the early Battlefront games. And I have a different appreciation for the battle droids. It's so weird to think.
It really is. But like, I think really just spending time with them as these kind of tragic figures, you know, really makes a lot of sense. And there was some delightful moments of battle droids here that I'm sure we can get into. Any other big picture thoughts?
No, I try to, hopefully it wasn't too rambly there. There's just so much in this episode and so much that's on the screen, so much that's in the script, and so much for us to connect to, that this is, again, an episode that will linger in my soul for a long time, and excited to discuss it both in how it matters to canon and recontextualizing the prequels of Dooku and Palpatine and the politics of it all, the clones, the battle droids, but also how you can take it to your office, how you can take it to your next relationship. This episode is real powerful and love to dive in. So thanks for letting me ramble.
Yeah, no, me too as well. I think, you know, like we always say, Star Wars is big, fantastic things, so space wizards with laser swords and clones and droids and that. But there are these lessons that you can wrestle with. I need to evolve, you know, and watching this episode and it's making me go, I don't want to be Crosshair. I would like to be Cody. I would like to, you know, be able to look around and make changes. So that is very helpful always. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to dive into some of the action and comedy we've referenced and some of the great canon connections, all that back in a moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue our discussion of episode 3 of Bad Batch season 2, The Solitary Clone. A lot of numbers in there. 3, 2, 1. We are going to talk action moments. This was kind of, for all of its depth, a great action episode. So, Ken, what were some of your favorite action moments?
We've got shuttles. We've got lots and lots of shuttles landing. Love just the action of the Clone Wars, even some of the Mando stuff. Filoni seems to work and influence and mentor people who appreciate landings. And we got that to start.
I feel like that was, in the Clone Wars animated series, one of Lucas's first things of like, don't you ever, ever shortchange me on a ship landing, animators. I want to see it. I want all the gears to come out. I want the hiss. I want the steam. Give it to me all. And yes, there was a lot of effective shuttle landing action and crashing.
And crashing, a great crash. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. It all does trace back to George, who sat down, put Dave on his lap, and is like, all right. Ship's got to land, okay?
Exactly. There's so many great moments. I think one of my very favorites, because it was high stakes, but it's also just visually different. After years of clones versus droids, it was visually different. That lobbing that sticky grenade onto the shoulder of the B1, shooting it, and then having the B1 phase through the droidica's shield and having them both blow up. It was like a cool tactic, and it was like a visual I'd never seen, which honestly did make me feel for both that battle droid and that droidica.
It really did. I put that moment down as well as just like, it was the speed of it. In an episode that moves pretty fast in terms of action, it was this slow, like,
slowly dying. Yeah, and this is a general big picture thing on the action. I did like how much it evoked other images from Clone Wars era battles, right? We've had a couple of battles where they have to get across like the bridge, you know, the moat to the castle. So we had that bridge. When the one clone failed to get their droid popper under the droidica's shield, it evoked that long training session with Saw Gerrera and Stila Gerrera in the Clone Wars of how to gently roll the droid popper through the shield, right?
So
a lot of the action really, if you're kind of a diehard fan, really evoked a lot of the past.
Yeah, this was we got the big politics lessons, the morality lessons of this episode going, hey, look back, what have we learned? I do think there's some little bit of let's go back on what we learned on the action side too. It was almost in a weird way a best of.
Yeah, it really was. What other best of action moments did you find?
Well, the first shuttle that is shot down, you're so right. The battle droid's taking it down, which ends with the battle droids going, nice shot, which was funny. but that whole sequence, I mean, it was reminiscent of like a war movie, of a World War II movie or helicopters in Vietnam footage. It was really visceral. It was really, again, fun action on one level, but it really kind of struck me on how violent it all really is. And so I thought that was a really powerful sequence.
Yeah, no, I agree. It made you feel the horror, right? And even with the cool, they survived, but Cody's line of like, yeah, half of them are too injured to move. So, you know, we're already depleted. I think, you know, kind of going from the beginning of that horror to close to the end of the battle horror, not the emotional horror, but man, I loved Cody's knife work. That was a shot in the trailer, right? The knife coming out in the trailer, it's just cool. All right, Cody's back. Look at that. That's Cody. Yeah. See the scar and the knife comes out. Why is his armor different? Oh, great. Great stuff in the trailer. And then to see it in the episode, and it's basically a horror movie, right? The desperate, you know, is it dead yet? Stabbing of the commando droid. Yeah. Cody begging for Crosshair, right? All of their like, do we trust each other? Do we trust each other? Comes down to this. you know, and it's a cool headshot to save Cody. And part of what I liked about it was like, that's cool action. I really enjoyed watching that. Cody did not. That was not a, hey, we took out some clankers, high five moment. That was every mission I go on, I could have died. Probably survivor guilt from the number of missions that Cody has survived, and he almost died. And you really felt like this could be it. Either of them could have died there, and that could have been the end of their story. And to have it be an action moment where I go, cool, knife work, but also at the same time go, and that was an absolute nightmare for Cody. There was nothing fun about it. It's really great.
I wrote down the set of Cody's knife work. Well, just like that knife work. Good wet work. Good knife work. Yeah, no, there's something about, was it Crosshair? Cody, just like being choked and everything. It was, again, played different. This episode was, again, this best of clones action and all cool weapons and just hit a little different, probably because the somber tone that's up top, you just knew you weren't watching the fun pew pew pew. So yeah, it worked for me as well. It, you know, that knife, I'll buy one of those knives. Give me a Cody knife at Galaxy Edge. I'll buy it. But I'm with you on that. It hit different.
Yeah. That'd be a hey kids, do you want some Cody knives?
Yeah.
Welcome to Galaxy's Edge. Yeah. What other action moments do you have?
We have the Crosshair. So we have the droids going, nice shot, but we have Crosshair taking out that tank with a nicer shot.
Yeah.
Everything about that sequence, I love a lot of the action plays out here where you're like, you're just kind of waiting to get to what you know the result will be, but the tension, the drama, the drive to get there, it was really, really great. And he's, you know, again, Crosshair, by all accounts, is the coolest of the bunch. He's just chosen some wrong things, and I can't root for him, but it was a great moment.
I love that he doesn't move, that he can tell from there that, like, the angle of their shot isn't going to get him, you know?
Yes.
That he's unconcerned, and then, you know, the sound effect of the foomp is his blast went into the tank was pretty great, too. Final one for me is the puck shot. You know, I really love his puck thing. That's cool. You know, it's playing on the, hey, they all have a different trick. He's an amazing shot, but then the ricocheting puck thing is great. But I just kind of like that moment of Cody being like, okay, cool. So you can do this puck. How far do I have to throw it? And they're like, don't worry about it. As far as you can, you know, and then just, it's like almost untrackable how cool it is. Right.
It also gives me the nervous sweats because it reminds me of like playing any video game, Battlefront included, where you have to kind of zoom in with your scope rifle, and I'm like, I can't make this shot. It's giving me the jitters just watching him try to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot in Battlefront of trying to get some of my sniping awards, and yeah, I'm not the best sniper. I'm no Crosshair, but even the hit on the tactical droid is really visceral, right? It's not like just one smoking hole through the chest. It's sort of like ripped one side of his head apart, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that. And again, shout out to wonderful Shelby Young doing the voice of the tactical droid. It like, oh man. Have a funeral for this droid.
Exactly. So that was it for me for action moments. Anything else for you?
No, I think there's a lot to follow and a lot to get to. And I think you touched upon all the big ones there. And again, the overall, it's you talk about, wow, now I'm rooting for droids. This was especially Andor and this isn't a criticism of Andor, but it plays quiet and smaller a lot. Right. And it doesn't have as much pew, pew, pew. It does got some, and that hits different too. Let's be clear. But I think there's part of me that's like, yay, the batch is back and we're going to get some fighting. And it's a different vibe. And this one kind of had that like, oh, wait, that's right. It still means something.
It's still rough. Still rough. Yeah. Still rough. And moving on to our little bit of salvation of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. Did you have some favorite moments there?
Yeah. I'll highlight again, but I just, it's not exact B for B, but I cannot think that Shelby Young's PA announcer was not the Mr. Skinner to the manager's office beat in Hot Fuzz. It just, everything about it. I was waiting for, you know, Crosshair to Rampart's office, Crosshair. It was so good. It was so fun. It was a little deep cut for me. I love that. It made me laugh. And then I like, this is one of the, I will say this comes off as super, super fourth wall meta. the comment, battle droids, didn't they receive the shutdown order? They could have been reprogrammed. So stop looking it up on Wikipedia.
But in minute this of Revenge of the Sith, didn't Palpatine tell Anakin?
Will still make some kind of snarky YouTube short video claiming the writers did not watch the prequels or something. But I love that they know enough to have like, okay, here's what we're playing with.
Yeah. Yep. And hey, there's pockets of battle droids. There's a great episode of Rebels that is a little bit of that last battle with the Grex and fighting the battle droids and all that. And they've been reprogrammed. All that stuff happens. Mm-hmm. We mentioned this line. It's dark comedy. But Rampart reviewing with Crosshair and in their first meeting, I think kind of poking him to test him and even insulting him to see how he takes it of like, yeah, no, you're not going to be ready to play commander again. Mm-hmm. How long did we leave you there?
You
still came back. Why? Rampart's always been good, but I really felt like this performance in this episode kind of took him out of a little bit of the, like, yes, the Imperial who wants power. You know, we meet a lot of them. So there's an First Order officer. So there's a kind of challenge of how to differentiate them and give them character. And I think the voice acting performance by Noshir Dalal in this episode gave him a little bit more of that sort of like, almost just cruel. Like, I'm enjoying hurting you, Crosshair, to see if you'll ever push back. I guess that's a weird thing to share and funny, but the delivery of why was like funny.
I'm with you on it. Again, he's a little bleep. I edit myself there, kids. I can't wait for a comeuppance.
Yep. My only other two moments are both battle droid moments that I'm sure we share. So why don't you go forward with some more comedy moments?
My final one that I wrote is, you probably have it too. That doesn't look good. Yeah, for them. That's great. I mean, how can you not root for these battle droids to come on?
Yeah. Oh, actually, I have two different ones because I think there's, you know, the battle droids, we've talked about a lot of like, are they scary enough in The Phantom Menace? Do they straddle that line of comedy? The reason that a lot of us struggled with them, I think, who grew up with the original trilogy, we were like kind of anticipating, well, what's the new stormtrooper that's real scary and cool? And the battle droids are not as scary. Anyway, come to the Clone Wars, right? And you get to see them as, you know, these, you know, poor, tortured beings with lots of legitimately funny lines. I think it's the movie where Asajj just throws a battle droid for no reason and it says, why? So with all that history, this episode was like the surprise where it feels like, okay, are they, when they've been rebooted, reprogrammed, have they been given a little bit more autonomy? Do they have a little bit more sense of what they are fighting for? Because they just seemed more righteous and scrappy, right? There's that line where really whiny Groton, you know, says, I am legitimate governor of Desix, you scrap heap. And the battle droid goes, It's comedy that's totally in line with Phantom Menace, with early episodes of Clone Wars, a kind of comedy, a battle droid comedy that does not sit well with everybody. But I loved it because it felt like that battle droid's got attitude. That battle droid is seen through the BS of Groton.
I here's what I think. I didn't think this as much as you did here, but I love what you're saying. And my headcanon is, yes, any of these reprogrammed droids have a little bit more into like an empathy chip. There's a little bit more a sense of justice in what they're doing. I love this idea because it just now I feel even less bad for rooting for them. I'm not rooting for clones to die. Not rooting for anyone to die. Everyone put your guns on stun like Bad Batch does. But I think you're right. I think there is a bit of that in there.
Yeah. Even the nice shot in the high five, the metal high five. I don't know. It there's these little moments that made me feel more like they were on board with what they were fighting for than just being forced to do this the way they are in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Entirely possible that I'm headcanoning some stuff here, but
But that's part of the fun.
I'll take it. All right, we're going to move on then to actual canon, favorite Star Wars canon, lore, connections to other stories. Let's just start with the Bad Batch canon itself. The big season finale of season one of Bad Batch. Crosshair is left alone on that platform. He has a choice to go with his brothers, right? And he doesn't. And then we learn that he survived there for 32 rotations. How did you imagine him spending his time there? You know, what did he eat? What did he decide as he sat there alone for 32 days?
I think he didn't do anything for at least 2 days. And he had some of those, like, did I make a, you know, Joe Bluth, did I make a huge mistake? And I think by the third day, he went looking in the ruins as best he could, maybe killed some kind of weird space fish. And by the fifth day, he was blaming the Bad Batch for it. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. And I've got to stay alive to get them or to, you know, reconcile with what's going on with them. But I think that's what drove him. Then I think by then he's pulling out food rations from little containers that are bobbing along tragically. And I think I want to see this short film, by the way. The days and nights of Crosshair.
Yeah, no, I think he's definitely bullseyeing some fish, you know, somehow unraveling a piece of cloth to make a fishing line.
Yeah, yeah.
Pulling them up. Yeah. But I love your emotional thought that there's a moment of, have I made a terrible mistake? You know, the Empire doesn't care about me. They're not going to come for me. And I don't think there's ever an illusion that the Empire loves him and that they're buddies, right?
Yeah.
But I do think it is that total, you know, like the dark side of the Force story we've seen with Anakin and Ben, of like, I made a bad decision. Now I can't turn around from it. I have to keep making more and more bad decisions to prove that first bad decision wasn't a bad decision.
Yeah.
And I like that of, he's like, yeah, well, no, maybe I should love with them. No, they're the ones who are wrong. And I'll stay here as long as it takes. I'll eat as much fish as possible to prove they're the ones who are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Stubbornness. That's it. Yep. Day four.
A depressing short film. We talked a little bit about the first battle memorial. It was featured during the hunt for Ahsoka in the Clone Wars. That's the first time that we saw it on screen and that it was created. And then I think it was added to, like, kind of the behind the scenes trivia on the website, that it is the first battle memorial commemorating all the clones who died in the first battle of Geonosis. Any other thoughts on that?
I think it's great. And I think it's something that I do remember from the Ahsoka episode, but definitely probably overlooked, right? And I think it's just one of those things that it's using your trivia to the best of its ability for your story. It was really affecting in this episode. It was very clear, purposeful choice, and I really enjoyed it. And, you know, wouldn't mind, it's a little dark, but I wouldn't mind a 3¾ scale wall to put up in my display, get some clones, have my toy display have some purpose and poignancy to it.
Hey kids, question war with the first battle memorial playset. Yeah. I would love that. There's some great play with calling clones by their names, right? We see that, you know, Rampart is doesn't even know their names, and like you pointed out, maybe that's shining a little crack in Crosshair. But I thought it was a really great kind of reintroduction to Cody, right? That to Cody and Crosshair, that they are using each other's names, right? That they, because we've seen some other clones affected by Order 66 who have become a little bit more rigid overall, right? And I thought that was really affecting that, like, Cody appears to still be Cody, so he must have rationalized that, yep, Obi-Wan was a traitor and that had to happen, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a way of somewhere Nemec's going, this is how they slowly get you, where, you know, you first you're not saying your nickname and you're following policy and saying your clone number, and that's how you slowly move away from who you are. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So very excited to see where Cody goes next. I'm very excited that this wasn't a one and done and that he made this great choice and where he's going to come up next, what he's going to feel. Very excited for that. Maybe there are shots in the trailers that tell us. I haven't reviewed because I want to be surprised. And then a big canon thing, obviously, is the name check to Mina Bonteri, but also just the episode check. Tawny Ames mentions that she and her colleague, well, here, I'll just read it. Peace. There was a time I believed in that. So much so, my colleague Mina Bonteri and I put forth a treaty with Separatist and Republic senators alike to end the war. Your Supreme Chancellor rejected it. If this was a comic book in the 1980s, there'd be a little asterisk next to that word balloon, and then there'd be a little note from Stan Lee. Hey, kids, check out Clone Wars episodes, Heroes on Both Sides, Pursuit of Peace, and Senate Murders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was great. You and I both love Mina Bonteri. We talk about her as a character and those episodes, but I think it was really great to be reminded of, sort of in the horror of the Clone Wars, you know, what was the way out? Well, it's pausing the battle and talking about, you know, what are our actual differences? How can we work this out? And that is the thing that the Sith, that Palpatine and Dooku would not allow, but that's what our heroes were trying for.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And none of this is to say that the Republic back in the day was spoiled rotten from top to bottom. That's not what's going on. I think it's what you're talking about at the end of it there. What are we actually doing here? What is our purpose? You know, you're standing on that big 700-foot wall of ice saying you're the Night's Watch protecting the realm, but who are you protecting it from and who are you trying to keep out? Analyze that. Find out. And I think every time I hear this stuff, the Mina Monteri stuff, the heroes on both sides from the crawl, this is what I mean. It is not justifying the acts of war on either side. It's just saying, here's the people behind it and those at the top whose goal is less than honest. Palpatine's goal was never peace. So that's why this was rejected.
Yep. Peace was never an option. So, yeah. And I think those episodes have been on my mind a lot. I kept meaning to do a Twitter thread, but, you know, hey, life, busy. Really curious to see if people who really engage with Andor because they liked the politics in the reality being more on the surface, if they'd be interested in Clone Wars episodes like these that are so explicit, right? With the politics of how did we get here? How could we have escaped this? You know, who believes what and why? Who sees through, you know, just, hey, we're doing all this horror to empower this one jerk behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still curious. I think just stylistically, some people who are into Andor would be like, man, yeah, I get it, but this storytelling style is not for me. But I'm curious if they would be able to really enjoy or at least see in a different light some of these episodes of the Clone Wars.
This is an absolute episode that if I'm putting together a little package for those who I very much understand don't find themselves as connected to animation. I've said before, I don't spend a lot of time with the Pixar films, and I couldn't tell you really why. I just don't connect with it as much, and that's an honest thing. So I get it. I have friends, so I'm like, no, I get it. I'm not trying to sit you down to force you to watch Rebels. I'm just saying this is a package. This is when I say it's in the Hall of Fame. It's like here's a 5-pack of episodes across Star Wars animation. Watch it and just see where they can go with this and see, you know, not what you're missing in a snarky way, but what you might want to engage with.
Yeah, exactly. And as always, it might not be for people, and that's fine. My last canon thing was an extremely depressing connection to Andor, which is after whiny Groton gets Crosshair to do his awful work for him and, you know, just murder Tawny Ames, Groton shouts out, put her body in the square. What a depressing connection to Clem Andor, right? Kind of trying to have a sense of humor about it because it's so depressing, but I think it is a continuing picture of the way the Empire operates, right? The forward-facing, you know, politics of the Empire is what? We're just an extension of the Republic, but we're even stronger in defending you from those who would attack the Republic. But even kind of lower level people like Groton, who doesn't, you know, he's been sent to be a governor of a really remote Outer Rim world that maybe has some resources they want. Not a high priority at all is basically what Rampart tells us, right?
Yeah.
So not necessarily coded as, you know, up in the ranks with Tarkin, right? This low level guy, even he knows I can use my power brutally to empower myself. I want to put her in the square so everybody in this on this planet sees that I, Groton, am the power. It's so awful and so depressing, but such a powerful picture of what the Empire truly is.
Yeah, you know, pointing at her body and saying, see, safe and secure society. Look what I've done for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's disturbing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really disturbing. So on that note, we do check in. Obviously, we've had a lot of good things to say about this episode. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned, though?
I consider this a perfect piece of Star Wars media. Like, I really, you know, not that we're here to give out these rankings. You know, there's always little beats here. Some of them I even need worried about talking about. The comedy here, all through Bad Batch, all through Rebels, all that stuff. I don't like that design. I can have those complaints if you want to put me in a car with an angry microphone. But this episode was truly, to me, a perfect from the opening shot to the final frame, and the music, Kevin Kiner's music, that music hit when it pans over to Crosshair to fires the blaster from that to the end of the episode. Some of the best Star Wars music ever. Loved it. I'm going to champion this episode for the rest of my days.
Yeah, I'm with you. I often do have like a little thing, a little aesthetic thing, or a little tonal thing of being like, yeah, that's Star Wars. Sometimes there is this tonal conflict. I felt there was no tonal conflict, because even the battle droid's weird humor to me was meaningful and powerful as I went on about. So you know, this episode was absolutely beautiful in its horror, and the more I think about it, it is made even more powerful by this little pop of hope, knowing this was mm-hmm. too much for Cody, and Cody's gone. Yeah. Cody is AWOL, is a thing of beauty. That's a message of hope now for me. I'm not going to get a tattoo, but it's close to tattoo territory. Cody's gone AWOL. That means something. And I agree with you. We also like to check in. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that we wanted to touch on? Tawny Ames' armor design, classic Star Wars, cool. Great. Her voice, cool. All the kind of traditional Star Wars like coding of, is that a bounty hunter? Is that, and then the mask comes off and it's this, you know, intelligent, thoughtful, determined, resourceful human face. Great. Mm-hmm. Love everything there.
Yeah. But I was going to say, because remember that this in the line was in the trailer, and there was a lot of like, is this a new bounty hunter guild or something like that kind of stuff? It has that kind of design. Reminds me a lot of what's going on with Infest Ness.
Let's
pull off the mask and show you what's actually happening here and why I'm fighting. And the fact that this character isn't some cool warrior. It's essentially a separatist senator, it would seem, that has decided this is the route because peace was never an option. It's even more powerful, as well as being a cool design that I need in figure form.
Absolutely. Totally agreed. And I'm not done agreeing yet. I also mm-hmm. want to shout out Kevin Kiner's music. I mean, he has done such amazing work across all of these animated series. And I think this episode, he outdid himself with, you know, some great and different battle music that kept us in the tone of, this is actually really scary. These stakes are mm-hmm. actually really, really high, both physically and emotionally for the clones. But yeah, I agree. The accent on the crosshair thing was great, painful, but the absolute tortured strings while Cody was watching the Imperial invasion of this mm-hmm. planet that he promised peace to. Oh, man, mm-hmm. just beautiful, powerful stuff.
Yeah, economy of words, right? This entire episode did not waste a word to me. And that silence and the music, beautiful.
Beautiful. Yes, yes. Our podcast episode has offered a great contrast to the economy of words in the episode we're discussing. So we are going to wrap up. If you could have a figure or merch of any character from this episode, who or what do you want?
Yeah, so, you know, Tawny Ames figure would be great. I think an updated Cody at the battle gray, so to speak. But I'm serious. I don't collect knives. I don't. I've had a few in my day. I've whittled in my day as my youth out my friend's house in the country. But give me a nice Cody knife, purchased responsibly and safely at Galaxy's Edge. Keep it away from Bogus Cantina. I would totally be down for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want a poster that of Cody that says Cody's gone AWOL. That would be fun. I would put that up. But I mean, you already mentioned it. But yeah, I need the first Battle Memorial playset that comes complete with a mm-hmm. sad Cody. You take his helmet off, and he looks sad.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Be the first to make a better choice, kids, with your sad Cody action figure.
Surprise, surprise! Cody's gone AWOL.
Cody believes in choice. What do you believe in, kids? Let's find out. Squeeze his legs to make a choice. Anyway, we love toys. We love Star Wars. We love this episode. That is our big discussion of the Solitary Clone. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social at Force Center. If you want to go over to Instagram, we're there at Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook as well, Force Center Podcast. We are on YouTube, and we've been asking folks, hey, maybe help us grow on the YouTube channel. If you want to subscribe over there, we're trying to reach 7,000 subscribers. So do so if you'd like. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Oh, don't forget merch, tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. What are we, inside 3 months to Star Wars Celebration? That's insane. And you can get a Force Center shirt and wear it so we can find you a lot easier in pubs around town. Follow me at Ken Knapsack or go to KenKnapsack.com for more. A new podcast out on my feed, the Knapsack Network, called The Blathering. Getting a little more honest and open and raw about things in my life. What about you, sir?
You can find me hinting at the truth of my life. I'm joking. You can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm on Twitter still, Hive, Mastodon, trying to build up a more community on Instagram as well. So go find me on Instagram, and you can check out my YouTube page. You can just search for Joseph Scrimshaw on YouTube. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for perhaps Crosshair's last friend, his toothpick, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Are you ready for truly hydrated skin? Meet Hyaluronic Body Serum, a breakthrough in body care from Osea. It's clinically proven to instantly increase hydration by 161%. Their lightweight, fast-absorbing serum delivers 24 hours of nonstop hydration for silky, smooth skin without the sticky afterfeel. Osea's latest innovation combines the magic of their best-selling Hyaluronic C Serum with a new formula that's good for the whole body and 5 types of hyaluronic acid to target every layer of the skin. Osea is a woman-founded, women-led brand that's been crafting seaweed-powered products for nearly 30 years. The best part? Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.